Welcome, everyone, to the Pop Culture Podcast by Fantastic Geek and our ongoing DC Film Fest. My name is Matt, and joining me, as always, is Pete. Hello, Pete.
Hello, Matt. Hello, everybody. Here today to talk the Batman.
Before we dive into that, Pete, I know that in a handful of days, Discovery will have its South by Southwest panel and preview and so forth. Maybe we are holding out the hope that we'll see episode 501 before its announced date in April.
Yes, the Star Trek Discovery season 5 final season world premiere screening will be Monday, March 11th at 5 p.m. Central Time. Hoping maybe that sneaks online in a legal sense, Matt, afterward. And then the next day, Tuesday, March 12th at 10 a.m. Central, there will be a final season panel, and hoping to get lots of news and lots of goodies coming out of that.
And I will point out, Pete, that the April 4th season premiere date is for two episodes, 501 and 502. So that does not dissuade the possibility that you still have season 4 launching on April 4th, even if the first episode comes early, that sort of thing.
Yeah, yeah. So give it to us now, please.
On that topic, Pete, the belief that the Mandalorian movie will be filming before the fourth season gets underway. I, however, remain super optimistic that we're going to get a good amount of Mandalorian content. Maybe not this calendar year, but that we're going to get it just because of, you know, that whole production process and how stuff is done with the virtual production space and all of that.
Lead Mandalorian stunt actor, I guess would be the best way to term him, Brendan Wade, was asked about this, not to be confused with Bruce Wayne. and he said all he knows about is the movie, nothing about a fourth season. The fourth season was written. This was pre-strike. It was scheduled to go into production in October of 2023. We know how that has played out. It is conceivable they took the best bits of that and crafted it into a movie. I have no doubt we will see the Mandalorian on a small screen again. Just remains to be seen when. Hearing also that Ahsoka season 2 has been fast-tracked for production this year.
And Pete, I'll just add to that the continued belief, A, that the Acolyte series comes out this summer, and one of the actors involved with Skeleton Crew had a quote. It was kind of like, you could tell, whatever the website was that did it, whoever was talking with this actor, they were trying to get blood from a stone here, but it's like the actor has heard from one of the directors that maybe November would be a good release time, but that is in the director's perspective, according to the actor, and not Disney news. You know, I mentioned that, Pete, just because it's not like, look, I would like a Mandalorian season every year, but it's not like they're looking around going, well, what other Star Wars content is there? You know, two new Star Wars shows are in the can. It's just a matter of when does that get released at times that makes sense for Disney, for the rest of the Disney Plus schedule, etc.
We also don't know that the Mandalorian, that Grogu couldn't show up in Skeleton Crew. So there's that possibility as well. I've been on the record. I'm ready to be wrong that Skeleton Crew, which completed production prior to The Acolyte, would see the light of day first. It may be a stylistic choice to break that up. Again, remains to be seen. There are people that are trying to say that, oh, because the Phantom Menace 25th anniversary, you know, hitting movie theaters, the re-release, oh, they're going to add stuff in there that's going to be for the Acolyte. That's,
come on, a Star Wars like special edition, come on, man. Well, no, hashtag bring back George.
but it's hogwash because when was the last time we had a special edition? Remember the prequel special editions? Now we're going to do that and Lucas isn't involved. I don't think that's coming.
Once a Star Wars is made, don't touch it. Hashtag bring back jeans guy from, was that season two of Mandalorian or season one?
Yes.
Yes. Well, don't take away my, the jeans guy. Pete, speaking of stuff they can't take away, okay, coming on Blu-ray, 4K, etc., we got the Obi-Wan limited series, Andor season one, Marvel, Falcon and Winter Soldier, Moon Knight. Pete, it's all stuff that when Disney decides to reshuffle or to not bring everything to Disney Plus hologram in 30 years or whatever, you'll be able to still enjoy those discs.
I am a proud physical owner of the first two seasons of The Mandalorian that came in beautiful steel books with art. It seems to be a thing that Disney's doing for these Disney Plus releases. Same with WandaVision and Loki season one. I'm going to scoop up all four of these seasons when they hit. This as Sony has now taken over Disney's DVD, Blu-ray, 4K production. So it'll be the last that come through, but done by Disney people. We see this all the time. We see things moving from streamer to streamer. So if you want to make sure you always have it, this is the way to do it.
Pete, I see a note here that you put in, which I have to admit, it makes me happy, and I had not heard about this, so please tell me more. Is there official news on Shang-Chi 2?
Yes, moving to production in 2025 for next year. Destin Daniel Cretton talking about that this week, writing and directing.
Super exciting news there. It's taken too long. To paraphrase Hope Van Dyne, it's about damn time. Pete, as we turn our way back to DC here, take me through this intersection of the visionary, the legendary, the godly, Zachary Snyder and Batman and so forth.
Yeah, appearing on some guy's podcast this week, I'm gonna make the choice to not speak his name. Had to get super edgy because that's what Zack Snyder does best, and talk about how, you know, Batman, oh, I was told he can't kill, but why? That's irrelevant that he can't kill. You tell me he can't kill, I want to make him kill.
Don't tell Zack Snyder no, because he's a visionary genius. I know it, Pete, because that's what the trailer for Watchmen said in 2008. You know, it's funny. I mean, look, there's killing and then there's killing. For in the course of our DC Film Fest here, you know, what, about 5-6 weeks ago when we watched Batman 1989, there is implied killing going on from Batman. In the bell tower, it kicking the guy over the edge, things of that sort. You know, but we know this is all funny paper stuff that we're watching, but context matters. And, you know, I think that enough people didn't care for the tone that Zack Snyder brought. Pete, I know he's a legendary, visionary, vision legend. But hey, you know what? You just rent these characters, you never buy them.
And, you know, that's always been the case with Batman. Like, what he's arguing is akin to saying Superman no longer has an allergic reaction to kryptonite. Okay? Like, these are baked into the character. And look at the way it's toyed with towards the conclusion of the Batman. Not to jump ahead here, but just in terms of relevance, right? After he takes the performance enhancing, you know, I guess we've got to say it's like adrenaline or whatever toward the end of the movie, right? After Catwoman's been attacked, Pattinson's character has to be pulled off this Riddler Legionnaire imposter, okay, by Commissioner Gordon, and, you know, oh, that's not the way to do it, and hence the realization of theme in the film that you're not vengeance, that the bad guys had taken to this mantra and this vision of vengeance, and instead be something greater, be a symbol of hope.
Pete, from that lofty point, let's rewind, at least for me personally, okay, when the first test footage for this film came out, in those heady days where there's not going to be any problem with this flu that people are having, February 2020, the first footage here.
And this production.
Yeah. I remember seeing...
his dialect coach.
Yes. Yes. That sad loss. I remember seeing the early footage and being like, nope, they're doing all these things wrong. Then there was the official, I don't know whether there's a trailer or early view, but it was a trailer, if not in that name. Again, March 2020. First view we get of the Batmobile. Nope, they got that wrong. It just looks like a muscle car. Boom, boom, boom. Just saying, this is a terrible idea. This is all wrong. Whatever. You need to reboot. This is terrible. Fast forward from that to when the movie finally gets released, you know, finished filming in the COVID bubble and so forth after the COVID shutdown, hits theaters and HBO Max, Pete, if we're allowed to still say that, March 4th, 2020.
It came to HBO a month later. This was the first one they decided to let have the slightest theatrical window, unlike a Dune, unlike those days when I could come home on a Friday, or a Dune might even been a Thursday night, okay, and day and date watch a theatrical movie in my home the way it's maybe intended, Matt.
Well, I know this. When I finally saw it, arms across, saw it at home, you know, what a revelation this film is. And the fact that, and I'm glad you clarified, Pete, that this was not an Operation Popcorn side-by-side release situation here. The fact that it made $700+ million in March of, you know, starting in March of 2022, you need to put $772 million. You need to, in my mind, you need to put an asterisk next to that. And in spirit or in future looking potential for the Pattinson films here, throw at least another $200 million on there. Maybe this is a billion-dollar movie if it's released a year later. The audience was there for it theatrically. The audience was there for it on Max. And super well-deserved, because I just love this movie.
Like you, with the initial footage, I had a tepid reaction. The legacy of this film is that it was duly cursed and assisted by the COVID-19 pandemic. Terrible that dialect coach Andrew Jack contracts COVID in March of 2020. They had shut down when everybody else shut down. First, it was a 2-week shutdown. And then, of course, this man dies, okay, which completely shook up the production. But what happened with the shutdown, and they didn't come back until much later in the year, was that Matt Reeves could really examine the theme. I have to think that a nearly 3-hour Batman movie is a construct, again, of COVID. I don't know that it needs to be this long. And when you consider this film's super long development arc, you know, people forget this began with the Ben Affleck Batman. He was going to star, write, direct. And then, you know, that kept flaking away. Oh, he's not going to direct now. but he's writing and he's acting, and then he hit rehab, and then he left the DCEU, and the decision here to recast, and it becomes its own thing. It is no longer with the characters they had established. This is a different version of Batman. So much going on, but they were gifted with this extra time as a result of the shutdowns, as a result of, you know, we can only have so many people on set, only so many cooks in the kitchen, etc.
I would agree that for my behind, this is too long a movie. The thing is, I don't know where there's too much. So I think look at it this way. It reminds me, Pete, of the Lord of the Rings extended editions. And Peter Jackson says in one of them in the commentary tracks, like, yeah, if you're watching this on disc, the track's done at the time before streaming, you know, like, that's an opportunity to say, I'm not going to do 3 hours in one sitting. I'm going to do 90 minutes on, you know, Fellowship Disc 1. And that's it for the day. And then I'm going to come back tomorrow and do Fellowship Part 2. I think that this movie is better watched in that regard. But again, it's not because there's too much fat. Maybe there's an alternate reality where you say, you know, here's the Batman Part 1, the Batman Part 2 that together make this movie, or together make something that's, you know, 3.25 hours, whatever it is. But, you know, I'm just in those opening shots here, I'm just in awe that we're getting Mayor Don Mitchell and his murder by, you know, if you've seen the trailers, the Riddler. I think it would be interesting to watch. It would have been interesting to watch this movie completely in the blind, or to watch it with someone who had no idea, you know, who people are, but a familiarity with, you know, everybody's familiar with Batman, Bruce Wayne, Alfred, the Riddler, the Batmobile. That, you know, so much in this is familiar, but just repackaged in this, you know, it's not the reality next door of the Burton films. This is like if the Batman was in our reality, and I'm really drawn towards that.
If you're going to kill the mayor, then the first police commissioner, then the district attorney, then turn your sights on the Wayne family. I definitely think there was a spot in this movie to trim things down. That being said, there's a lot here that's good. And coming through that troubled development and finding Reeves, a huge Batman fan who had a very singular vision for what he wanted to do, and then the casting of somebody nobody figured would be a serviceable Batman in Robert Pattinson, okay? And everybody's fears over the Pat-Bat and what that would be, okay? And Reeves doubling down with the angsty Nirvana, Cobain, something in the way inspiration that he's drawn here for his Bruce Wayne Batman, young in general, young to the vigilante role. Again, the duality of I'm vengeance, to by the end of the film finding that greater calling and really embracing more than any of the other depictions to this point, this hardcore detective underbelly with all of the corruption involved. And then you've got the drugs subplot with the drop heads, and that, you know, one of the Halloween costumes early on, he is literally drugs, the guy doing the hold up, you know, seeking inspiration from some of the comic runs, you know, the long Halloween run. And then there was a follow up that, you know, Reeves took inspiration from. And like you said, of all the villains to go to go to the Riddler here. You know, that we did the other Batman movie with the Riddler, and now this one. Not forgetting that at one point Riddler was in the crosshairs for Nolan, a guy who probably is going to win a best director tomorrow night. And they wanted to do a super grounded, you know, let's get Johnny Depp to be like a, you know, cryptologist, a former military, you know, codes, all that kind of thing. And, you know, the way they do the dual-sided orphan, I mean, it's almost too much the mirrored development of Wayne, and they give this Riddler a different name, right? It's close enough to the one that Jim Carrey's character had.
Edward Nashton is one of the names.
Which one is me? You know, like, that's good, and Dano's very good in the role, but it has to be the less comedic, the more mad Riddler here. I could do less with the bondage mask and the glasses, but the riddles and the cards and the just cipher, you know, really loaded. Again, that's where I think it naturally has to contribute to this film's really long runtime.
Pete, the Arctic warfare mask that he's wearing, thank you very much. look, as you said, there's this there's this singular vision here from Matt Reeves. I give Warner Brothers credit for going for all of this, because this at times feels like an R-rated movie, which I keep needing to remind myself it's not. Despite the kind of the implications, you know, like, is it the police commissioner who dies with the rat cage head thing? Like,
yes.
It's what things like that. Like, it feels like, oh man, it's as hardcore as the movie Seven. No, they actually don't show. Most of that is by implication, you know, cinematic implications.
There's a fair amount of gore, though. There's more blood spatter in this than any Batman movie we've seen to this point, and this coming after, you know, Nolan's films regarded as being, you know, oh, these are super violent. Yeah, I mean, each incarnation has to set itself apart. And there's that stat too, like, we went so far between Keaton's Batman and those four films to when we had the Nolan films, right? So the first Nolan film was 2005. So 89 to 2005, right? And then it's actually accelerated, okay? So Nolan's movies finish in 2012. And then you have a new Batman in Affleck in 2013, right? Or 14 was Man of Steel. Okay, I just don't want to look it up right now. and then you have this one. You know, I've seen people saying that, you know, in the future there will be a Batman movie every 6 months.
I mean, all I know in the world that we get here, you know, I'm somewhat reminded of my comment from when we did Batman 89 that, like, with the rewatch we've all done of that movie since 1989, you can kind of be like, oh, here's the four corners of their Gotham City backlot, and that's kind of the extent of it. You almost start to get that here, except for the fact that we're at the Iceberg Lounge so much that it, by necessity of the story versus like,
Can't see you in the red light I'm bathed in right now.
Pete, every time I've watched this movie, especially if I watch it on my phone, I need to crank up the brightness. I think it is a little too dark. It is. I know that it is meant to be that way.
It's stylistic, and I'll grant him that. okay? And whether it's at the Iceberg Lounge or it's with the flare, it's funny, the flare is orange when he first lights it, and then everything bathed in the red, just like the film's logo. It does set itself apart. It is a unique visual take on this. And like you said, you know, this is in our world, complete with a circular square garden.
Yeah, and you know what? Like, I'm okay. Look, we've had Tim Burton Batman that is has its wonderful energy. None of it, you know, it doesn't feel real. It feels, it's the comic book brought to life in reality. It's kind of almost the perfect medium in many ways. We've had the Joel Schumacher version, you know, which has its own energy. We've had the Zack Snyder one that's, you know, different and all that. I'm okay spending a little time in the 80 years of Batman. Let's spend this movie or the Batman 2, the Batman 3. I think they have plans through a third one right now. Let's let it live in our world, which is a scary place. And I know, Pete, we're somewhat going chronologically and somewhat kind of just going all over the plot here. To take the turn in this film where it's not just kind of these delightful riddles. Okay, they're also kind of savage, right? People are dying. And I love the wordplay there of the thumb drive, you know, all of that. Love that we kind of get to do the whole, you know, detective on our couch sort of thing and play along and try and play along. But at a certain point when it turns and you go, oh, these are disaffected extremists brought together online, coming together for a homegrown terrorist attack. Like, that's not as fun as Nicholson pulling a giant gun out of his pants, but, you know, I'm okay Batman talking a little bit about the dangers of our world in this film. And
they actually pulled back after January 6th. There was more of that, believe it or not. And they didn't want to go that far.
You know what, to me, everything that we get in this movie is the right amount for the Reeves vision. Again, I could do with it slightly shorter, I could do with it a little bit brighter, but I'm not complaining of what was put on the plate. Even Pete, to know that there is but one deleted scene, and the deleted scene is, you know, of clearer views of the Joker, so smart to sit and go, people could just figure out that the guy that you could barely see with the hair that is that green, and I can't quite see the smile, but I hear the laughter, like, it's the right amount, even though they had more in the can.
Not credited as the Joker.
No, what is it? Arkham, anonymous Arkham prisoner or whatever? Unseen Arkham prisoner. Yeah, yeah.
It's weasel worded. Barry Keoghan or Keon, depending on which pronunciation you're going to use here. And what's so interesting as the sequel is gearing up for production later this year is the guessing game about who's back. Is he the villain? There's been indications they would do a grounded take on Mr. Freeze. My mind wobbles at what that could be like. You've already said they've apparently burned an Arctic mask, although that could be somebody taking it up. There's all sorts of indications that Paul Dano is returning for this one, that they would do Hush. I'm very interested to see where they're going to take it. I'm also very interested to see how they're going to do without the gift of extra time, without, you know, the difficulty that they went through to birth this version of Batman.
That's an interesting kind of meta story point that's worth keeping in mind, that, you know, were these difficulties things that contributed to, in a positive way, to the outcome? And heck, was the downtime not exactly in the middle of the shoot? I think they started in January, you know, shut down about 8 weeks later. But, you know, to have a chunk of footage shot and to start to say what works, what doesn't, and I can only imagine that impacted.
Reeve has talked about it, you know, in terms of really, really editing. It wasn't allowed to be with other editors, okay, because of the COVID restrictions. And just pouring over the footage to find that. And, you know, the realization, too, of Michael Giacchino's score that is so unique, okay? A little repetitive, but I think he knows what to hit again and again. You know, the bells, the theme that he develops for the Batman here, you know, really... really different than what we've had before. I think of the footage we saw that comes from late in the film where Batman's in the hallway and the scene is lit only by the gunfire is about as iconic a scene as you get for this film. And the integration of that with Giacchino's score really, really drive this film.
I think of how any film production, TV production, it's made by everybody. It's made by the family that comes together for that production. I think that Giacchino's score is a letdown for him, and I suspect, and I haven't read anything. I haven't read that it's a letdown for. I haven't read any of this. This is just my thought across the artistic divide. I think that Giacchino is sitting at home during COVID writing music that's not for a trailer. It's not for this. That's got to now be recorded by an orchestra, and I suspect that he's thinking to himself, if I do all sorts of little things that normally when we're all recording, we're all in one room, you know, I can lean over to the flutes and say, you know, make it sound more like a feather, you know, blah, blah, blah. And people are going to understand that energy, but you can't do that. I imagine Giacchino saying, we might be in a situation where everybody is recording their parts at home and we're just mixing virtually, that may be a slightly less ornate, I'll just stick with ornate, score, that maybe that's the way to go. I agree with you, Pete. There's an iconography there. We have, you know, it's great, the repetitive nature, especially in the beginning where people are looking up at the bat signal. You know, what he wrote is used wonderfully. I think he was aware he had to record it and he had to do right by the people that are in his musical family, the orchestra that comes together and so forth, and that maybe this was the best recordable script that you could do in a 2020, 2021 area. So that might sound like a backhanded compliment. At the end of the day, I've listened to this score all the way through a number of times on Spotify, and it's good. I think it maybe lacks his greatness, but again, you're going to get the out for what it is and when it is.
I think that particular theme is great. Overall, I'd agree with you on the score, and that's with the super high bar of Giacchino's work, who for my money is the heir apparent to John Williams. But the whole, undermining of that, perhaps, you know, you can't play that great theme with the overwhelming amount of time that Batman spends around cops in this film, like, really, really struck me on this rewatch. Jeffrey Wright's Gordon is great, has by far the most action of any, James Gordon to this point. But hey, man, he's really around a lot of cops, man.
It's funny. I love, look, everybody loves Jeffrey Wright. And I think of Jeffrey Wright in some of the Wes Anderson stuff where, you know, it's all stylized and weird and whatnot. And he's so low key here. And it's in line with this Lieutenant Gordon, who's not even at the top to say, we're going to lead the way, you know, we're going to lead the way to fight crime here. He's this guy caught in the mire like everybody else. And just the whole, like, hey, man, I didn't know who turned on the light. Like, I don't want to suggest that Jeffrey Wright is sleepwalking through the performance. Wright's doing everything. It's that Lieutenant Gordon is sleepwalking through this nightmare of not even fully understanding how terrible Gotham City Police Department is, and only realizing that it's getting worse and worse and worse as the movie goes on.
Yeah. And then this notion that the mayor's boy is a mirror for our Batman here, right? The dramatic irony that we know who Bruce Wayne is, the tortured nature, the use of the contact lenses to journal and in medias res give us this developing story of what he's been doing for a couple years now, and to later have that assist him in the investigation when we bring in Selina Kyle. Really like Andy Serkis as Alfred. I gotta wonder again, you know, with the level to which he's assisting, and then he's the surrogate dad and he's the bridge to the parents who aren't there anymore, who thankfully we don't get to watch assassinated in this film. However, follow the bouncing ball or the bouncing pearls, Matt. Okay. Alfred survives an assassination, and there's one scene with him afterward, and then he's never seen again in this film. Was that another victim of COVID, and then his involvement, albeit in the same locality, to go film Andor?
It also just may have been a case that the story moved away from him. It's funny, I was thinking of
you have a 3-hour movie and you can't bring Alfred back for one scene. Oh, you did a good job.
Fair criticism. I wasn't missing it in
it's
part.
It's among the movie's biggest failings.
To my mind, I mean, you mentioned Selina Kyle, Zoe Kravitz. Again, it's like for their vision of Selina Kyle, Catwoman, Zoe Kravitz just nails it. You want to talk about chemistry. Like, you buy, and look, it's Pattinson, it's Zoe Kravitz, it's cinematographer Greg Fraser, it's the director, so many people. But like that first scene where Batman and Catwoman are fighting and she's breaking in, they're fighting, but it's also close quarters. It's just the camera, the acting, the chemistry. It's a fight. It's also sensual. Like, it's just, it's all that needs to be. The fact that you get a movie, I mean, you step back and go, the great successes of, let's say, the two Tim Burton ones. I know Batman Returns has many, many failings, but like, to sit and go, well, those are three baddies between those two movies. And in this one, you're getting Catwoman, Penguin, Riddler, and a little sizzle of Joker, let alone with, you know, the crime families and you know, baddie cops and all of that. There's your 3-hour runtime. But again, I think I'll defend the story not returning to Alfred, in that, if you know the Batman mythos, like, hey, we officially didn't kill Alfred. Like, you know, he's in the hospital. Therefore, Alfred continueth on, for forever. To end with this bittersweet, you know, she's leaving. She's going to other DC Comics cities. And Batman's staying here. And just the chemistry that those two characters and those two actors have, and the breakup there. You know, and it's the Batman sacrifice, the personal sacrifice, and all of that. All of that had me wrapped up, and I wasn't worried. I wasn't worried for old Alfred, who's gonna be pouring tea again before too long.
She is a very good Selina Kyle Catwoman. I happen to prefer Anne Hathaway, but she's definitely second. Edgy, helping with the save towards the end, the wrinkle of being Falcone's daughter and the motivation there. Rumors that she returns for the sequel as well. Really hope that's the case. And she helps him, you know, manifest as the full-fledged Batman, which, let's be honest, that's the second film. It's not in doubt. It's what he is now instead of this fledgling adventure. You know, back to the villains for a moment. As long as it is, I still don't think it's earned that runtime with those characters. But I'll tell you what, Matt, Colin Farrell's Penguin, Oswald Cobblepot here, is unrecognizable. I remember having to remind myself, that's Colin Farrell underneath there. I can't find him.
This is a movie that I think, because of where we were at in COVID recovery, box office, also comes out March. That's a weird time to get a critical darling out there. This movie should have been nominated for more Oscars, and Colin Farrell should have been nominated for an Oscar for this. You're right. He's absolutely unrecognizable. You completely buy that Oswald Cobblepot is here and that it's not an actor. You know, it feels like you've plucked some, you know, some unknown who's, you know, a tough from the streets.
What are you showing me?
It's just, you know, he's fantastic in it. And as you're saying, it's yet another baddie who's now reserved for future storytelling. Pete, anticipated by the end of this calendar year, 2024, we'll get the Penguin series. On the one hand, my heart goes out to all these big studio productions that want to do hashtag it's all connected.
Production in January. I don't know that we'll see it this year, but yeah. Come on, it's teed up at the end of this film, right? You know, the flood has come, the metaphor in full effect, and there are those that will look out the window and seize their own limited series on the former HBO Max. But I'm excited for that. And what is it again? It's an outgrowth of an already almost 3-hour movie.
Yeah. And look, I'm sympathetic to strike. I'm sympathetic to a point, you know, strike shutdowns and COVID shutdowns and whatnot, kind of messing up the intended pattern of like when the TV show feeds into the movie or when it's a sequel and when it's a prequel, all that stuff. But, bring on his show. Who knows, Pete, maybe you see some Batman in it and so forth, much like our Mandalorian discussion. Maybe you get some Batman in this Batman adjacent TV show and so forth. I just lowercase M Marvel at this movie. I mean, Peter Sarsgaard, our baddie in last week's podcast, here much smaller role. I mean, rewatching for the podcast to see Gil Coulson, no relation to Phil Coulson, to see Gil Coulson in what ultimately is like 3 or 4 scenes. You kind of, on the one hand, it's like you got Peter Sarsgaard for 4 scenes. Flip side, you know, you completely
understand. He's super high on the call sheet too. Did you notice?
I didn't, but like he delivers, and like you understand who he is from the first moment when he's kind of like the pathetic, you know, like, hey, Selena Kyle, hey, stripper lady, you want to be my friend? Like it, everything is there in his first moments that you need to know about the guy.
I mean, coming off a podcast last week where it looked like his head would explode to a film this week in which it does. just too late. The tremendous tension of that scene where his dome gets blown clear off into Batman's torso. Okay. And what is a horrifying death? Yeah, really, really well done. And to think we're like not even at the halfway point of that film by the time that that's happened now. And again, the corruption just extends so high, okay, that can only be done by a good old fashioned car chase with a new Batmobile that's not a long weirdo car and isn't a, you know, SUV. So it's like a supercharged kind of fast car that we're going to stick in front of the most emergent film technology today.
Well, and that's the thing. I don't like how this Batmobile looks in sunlight. I don't like how it actually is in real life, but you stick it in this movie, it's got the angles where you sit and go, yeah. This is the business end. This is the supercharged engine end that's also got a turbo boost, you know, the traditional, you know, Batmobile, you know, flame whatever at the end, jet engine. Like, this is a thing, wait for it, that was made to be filmed in a movie, not that was made to necessarily sit alongside the Tim Burton one that just looks sexy from every angle. This is a workhorse. It'll be interesting. Do they make it more stylized in the next film?
You're going to get neon vents in the front of that thing?
I wouldn't go that far.
What's that?
I wouldn't quite go that far. Just, you know, does it continue to evolve? You know, you go back and rewatch this movie and there it is underneath the, you know, underneath the drapes in the Batcave for several scenes as work is progressing.
I want a grounded bat boat. It's time to return. It's time the Batman return to the high seas. Okay. Let's get a bat dinghy going in the sequel.
I just want to reiterate the end here. It's not, what is it? It's not Gotham Square Garden. What's it called?
It is Gotham Square Garden. Yes. Just like Madison Square Garden, which is circular here, the same.
The physical construction of it, where we get enough easy establishing shots to say, hey, the arena floor is below ground level, yeah. You know, and then the flooding coming in, and just to use that space up in the rafters, a very Batman place, right? And then
it is a gasp worthy scene.
Yeah. Just the whole use of that space, you know, all of it constructed, I'm quite sure, you know, it's just fantastic. And you mentioned, Pete, the cutting edge technology here. I think even knowing that some of the scenes were, you know, using LED screens, scenes like the bat signal, you know, unfinished building, that's all LED wall in the background, so you can get perpetual sunset. A lot of the car stuff, Colin Farrell driving the car, a lot of that is a rig that's, you know, surrounded by LED screens and so forth.
I'd imagine some of the club as well.
Perhaps certainly the shot, you know, like, and hope will return. It's kind of like a left to right or right to left shot of, you know, helping people, is it into the helicopter or off the roof or whatever.
Yeah,
like,
I don't think they filmed on an actual roof,
but it's just, you know, it works here and it works. You know, we've spent plenty of time praising always how Mandalorian gets all those shots right, and Star Trek had a little bit of a learning curve when they built their own, you know, all those things. Like, Pete, there's a reason that the cinematographer for this is Greg Fraser, who, by the way, let's see, what did he work on before this? Oh, he worked on The Mandalorian. They knew what they were doing to get him.
Again, dual aspect here, you know, first off, the trope of the Riddler allowing himself, the villain allows himself to be captured, right? Okay. Little bit of the Bond-esque, I'm going to tell you my plan trope. But that he knows who Bruce Wayne is, right? He's put it all together. There's more than implication that the cameras are working, whether or not they have sound, whether other people know this now. But that they were both orphans, right? Like, oh, the poor billionaire orphan. And instead, I was addicted to drugs with 30 kids in a room at 12 years old, yet somehow clawed my way out of it and became a forensic accountant, and then decided on vengeance with you as my inspiration. Like, it's successful enough, but at the same time, it feels a little heavy-handed. This off the indication that Wayne's parents were dirty, somehow deserved what happened to them. In the only presentation where we don't see it, thank goodness, again, because we've seen it enough. We've seen it from every angle, all right? And the film is smart enough to know that, okay? But that Martha had her troubles. Correct me if I'm wrong. This is – I don't remember whether there'd been a connection before to Martha, her maiden name being – Arkham, you know, that they had the association with the asylum. Was that a thing before?
Not that I'm aware of. Quick search on Wikipedia says Martha Wayne, formerly Kane. So
okay, that's what I thought. Yeah. So change it up, and here it works. I'm fine with it, and the tortured nature there. But I don't know, man. Like, tarnishing the parents. All right, does that help to lead him out of the vengeance mindset? Well, why am I going to avenge my parents, who I love, who also, you know, had dirty hands? Just like all these other authority figures throughout the film. And then you get the overstated line to Gordon, oh, you're a good cop.
I like that some of the things you're reflecting upon, to my mind, it exists somewhat in the gray in a movie that's very, very, you know, black in terms of its lighting. But I agree with you that it is floated that the parents were dirty and probable that Thomas Wayne was doing a little bad for a greater good. But I also like that it's not completely definitive, or at the very least, I'm not seeing it as completely definitive. Again, I think it's to the credit of this narrative that we're able to kind of exist in an in-between place. Similarly with, has Riddler figured out that Bruce Wayne is Batman? I mean, there's definitely that moment where we are 1,000% meant to believe it, and then I think the moment kind of moves on in his ramblings. As you're saying, Pete, how much has been recorded? How much has the audio been recorded and so forth? The movie kind of moving us along from there. It's, you know, this is masterful storytelling that we're seeing here.
With that, Matt, let's check out what people had to say on Twitter.
The options here, we'll start from the bottom up, thumb down. Thumbs Drive down, got 9.1%. Two Bats Walk Into the Light, 22.9%. Three Bats Mr. Vengeance, 40.9%. And Four Bats Best Since Burton, which, by the way, Pete, is where I would put it, 27.3%. And looking at some of the comments, Pete, first one up is from Spider-Ham Lincoln, who says as follows: I've seen it once and it was just okay. A little too long. Didn't make me yearn to see another Pattinson Batman movie, but if there is another one, I'm sure I'll watch that too. Pete, that's a great jumping off point to say the one thing that really disappoints me coming out of this movie is that apparently at director Matt Reeves' urging and, shall we say, creative insistence, this version of Batman and Robert Pattinson are not part of the new DCEU, not part of the James Gunn Batman.
Yeah, it's the since branded Elseworlds, which I think is really going to work out. But yeah, that it's not, right? It's all about the film universes now, and that it is and it isn't. I think pulls it down ever so slightly.
It is all about the film universes, except when it's not. You know, go ask the Marvels, which had, what, two TV shows leading into it and was a sequel to a $1.1 billion movie. Okay, that didn't do well in a no-COVID situation. The Batman, meanwhile, $772 million in a, let's say, in a COVID haze box office situation. You know, this might be a case of best of both worlds. And anybody who's saying, oh, it's too... anybody who didn't like the Pattinson offering, guess what, Pete? You're getting another Batman in another universe that's going to play with Superman and Green Lantern and all that, you know, before too long.
Well, but I think even then, like, he's over a barrel until when he can introduce that Batman. Okay? Like, we're back to Star Trek, Matt. All right? Our favorite Star Trek pet discussion, you know, when that Kelvin Universe 4 movie's coming, this is, there's a Spock and an Uhura and a Kirk on a small screen right now, which is only going to complicate things. I really think it's going to be a while until we have James Gunn's Batman.
And that might be, like, that's okay too. Let that be a quote-unquote phase two for the for DC films, you know.
Or, have you heard about this guy? They're gonna totally Joker him, okay? Oh, look, there's his calling card is a card, okay? they're gonna slow burn it. At least that's probably the best approach until, you know, Pattinson's done his three films and he's out. And then they're reintroducing a Batman.
Last tweet.
Not the Batman.
the Batman. Last tweet comes from Jordan, that's at The Mighty Jor, who says the casting is excellent. I really enjoy their refusal to rush the story because it allows us to take part in the mystery and get to know the characters. This film is an example of comic book films being high art and is the shining star for comic book films going forward. Jordan goes on to say, I had very little interest in this film based on the trailer, to bring our conversation full circle. After seeing it on IMAX at the fan event, it not only became my favorite Batman film, but one of my all-time favorite films. The cinematography from Greg Fraser is some of the best I've ever seen. The score is amazing. You know, I think, Pete, we're in agreement that this is definitely a home run of a film.
It's very, very good. You know, we're judging incompletely, Matt, against, you know, four Burton films, three Nolan films. I mean, does he get two here if we're gonna follow through on the joke before that in the future there'll be a Batman movie every 6 months, and things just keep contracting. Like you said, arms crossed, you know, I also went in, you know, super low expectations and was very effective. If other than the complaint of the bloated runtime. But man, it is a meal. They give you a lot.
Pete, with this ongoing DC Film Fest, we've had, you know, something old, something new, something borrowed. Next week, something blue, Blue Beetle, a movie I have not seen. Have you seen Blue Beetle?
No.
Okay, so it's going to be brand new to us, and I'm looking forward to it. I feel like I heard generally good things. The trailer looked fun. It didn't...
Love the kid from Cobra Kai, okay? Does a really good job.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it, and then the week after that, week after that will be Flash.
See, in my mind it flipped, and I was doing Flash this week, and I'm like, oh, all right, I get to see like all these cameos I've heard about and everything, and nope, I'm gonna put that off another week.
There you go. And of course, this journey into the DC Film Fest has been made possible by those who support us on patreon.com/fantasticgeek, and thank you one and all for keeping us listener supported.
Everybody who contributes gets access to exclusive content, all sorts of levels to choose from, and we will be revising our levels in the not so distant future, so keep an eye out for that. Got a fun little shtick that's going to follow along with that. But if you can't contribute right now, get yourself over to Apple Podcasts. You can leave us a rating, a review in just a couple minutes, and helps us just as much.
And Pete, let's keep this DC conversation going, or maybe people have thoughts on Star Wars, Star Trek, Marvel. How can people be in touch with you on social media?
You can find me on Twitter. You can find me on Threads. You can find me on Blue Sky at Peter, PieterJKetelaar, KetelaaR, 12,600 followers. Can't be wrong.
And while I'm personally on Twitter as Looking Back Lost, do be in touch with the podcast. Comment on FantasticGeek.com. Check us out on Twitter, Instagram, Gmail, and Threads, where we are Fantastic Geek as well. But wait, Pete, there's more.
Facebook.com/FantasticGeek with a PH, all one word, like it today.
As stated, back next week for Blue Beetle, then Flash, at which point, Pete, it'll be time to start to think more about Star Trek Discovery and its final season. With that, Pete, I will say adios to all our listeners as I get ready to descend back into the darkness and give you the final word.
Talk to you soon.